The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's that time again. Prepare your brains to get infiltrated by the raspy lesbian voice of America's top podcaster, the Skrillex of podcasting himself. No ass, one ball, and ready to yap. He's uncertain that this entire dimension isn't a CIA experiment, and he thinks we all may be in some kind of solitary confinement being injected with massive amounts of psychedelics that have made us hallucinate this entire reality. He's a stinky little man who loves fiber pills and bidets. He wants to play guitar but doesn't have the discipline. And now he's coming to you, live-ish, from the internet. Put a crown on your grandma and rub your dog's paws. Here he is, oozing into your earbuds like Nutella into the vagina of the queen. It's Duncan Trussell!
Hello, it's me, Duncan Trussell, and you're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And did you know that at this very moment, you could be making memories for your future children? It's true, and it's science. This is from the Telegraph, UK. I'll post the link on the comments section of this podcast. Memories can be passed down to later generations through genetic switches that allow offspring to inherit the experience of their ancestors, according to new research that may explain how phobias can develop. Scientists have long assumed that memories and learned experiences built up during a lifetime must be passed on by teaching later generations or through personal experience. However, new research has shown that it is possible for some information to be inherited biologically through chemical changes that occur in DNA. Researchers at the Emory University School of Medicine in Atlanta found that mice can pass on learned information about traumatic or stressful experiences, in this case a fear of the smell of cherry blossoms, to subsequent generations. The result may help to explain why people suffer from seemingly irrational phobias. It may be based on the inherited experiences of their ancestors. This is a pretty awful experiment. They took these poor little mice and they would fill the air with the smell of cherry blossoms while electrocuting them. And then the offspring of these mice freak out whenever they smell cherry blossoms. So the idea that memories, phobias, fears can be passed down genetically from one generation to the next obviously opens up the doorway to so many psychedelic ideas that so many different people, from the New Age movement to clairvoyance to you name it, have been saying for a very long time, which is that encoded within us is this kind of library of information. And the name of that library is the Akashic Records. If you don't know what the Akashic Records are, I'm just going to go to our digital Akashic Records Wikipedia. It says that in Theosophy and Anthroposophy, the Akashic Records, a term coined in the late 1800s from Akasha, the Sanskrit word for sky, are a compendium of thoughts, events, and emotions believed by Theosophists to be encoded in a non-physical plane of existence known as the astral plane. Has science discovered the Akashic Records are not in some hokey, crystal-gazing astral plane, but in fact exists somehow within our very genetic structure? Is it possible that science will eventually be able to uncode and to unravel all the memories of our ancestors locked into our DNA? What are these memories? Are they memories? Is it some kind of genetic switch that gets turned that somehow encodes within the depths of the chromosomes of baby mice a fear of cherry blossoms? What does that look like? How does it work? Does this point to the idea that there is no time and that at every single moment we are connected to all the ancestors who are currently existing in the multiverse in a kind of multidimensional sandwich of happening? Could it be that in the future, super advanced computers will actually be able to do a genetic scan and show us memories of those that went before? All metaphysical mumbo-jumbo aside, there's something incredible about the idea that there is the possibility that certain experiences that we have will continue to move through time genetically into the future as long as we have little babies. It's also incredible to think that the experiences that we inflict on other people don't just end with those people, but have the potential for moving into eternity. That really is crazy. To imagine that decisions that Hitler made are continuing to roll through the chromosomes of all those who are affected by his monstrosities. It's also a hopeful thing to imagine that the wonderful experiences that we allow other people to have could potentially continue to reverberate genetically through time, like some kind of chromosomal bell ringing through all the positive actions of those who have been encoded by whatever experience that was good that we helped to engender. It's a really amazing thing to imagine. This really lends credence to all the religions that have some component of ancestor worship or praying to the ancestors. And there's also a very small but real bit of comfort that comes from knowing that within you exists all of the loved ones that you may have lost, that somewhere inside of me, maybe there are some of my mother's memories hiding out in my chromosomes or the memories of my mother's mother or mother's father. Wild stuff. Thank you, science, for helping to affirm my basic belief that we exist in a spectacular universe and that your unraveling of the great mysteries of this universe don't lead to dullness or stasis or stagnation, but actually only increase the beauty and novelty of this incredible dimension that we happen to be floating on a genetic raft through.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Ridge. Listen, man, I feel terrible because I left my Ridge wallet in the car. But I must tell you, I destroy wallets. That's what I do. Like, if you are trying to identify me as an animal, one of my primary characteristics would be he destroys wallets as a practice. I don't even know how I do it. Like, I don't do anything special with them, but by the end of a year, if I even kept a wallet that long, it looks like somebody was using it to train an attack dog. And I don't know what that is. But Ridge Wallet, my God, it has somehow held up. It feels like I just got it yesterday. These things are like the most durable wallet of all time, and it's compact. It's compact, not some big old giant stupid wallet. You feel like you're sitting on a little pillow all day, smushing it, getting that ass heat on it, melting down the fibers with your flatulence, not a ridge. Ridge wallets are insane. You got to try it out. But now, Ridge has just released the Ridge 2.0, the most refined version of the Ridge wallet. It's 10% lighter, and they've made it even more modular with improved cash straps, money clips, and the AirTag attachments. That's right. You could stick a little AirTag on the thing, and you won't lose your wallet anymore. It's made with premium materials like aluminum, titanium, and carbon fiber. Over 50 colors and styles to choose from. Of course, I picked Black Power Wallet. I don't know if they even want me to talk about this, but you got to try their chargers. Check this baby out. Woo! This thing is so good. Look at that. Just sticks to the back of your phone. Beautiful. Built-in chargers. A readout here, so you know how much is charge is left on the thing, and it's, I don't know, man, it holds a ton of battery life. Sorry, Ridge, I don't even know if you want me to read that. So don't just get the wallet, get the charger. For a limited time, Ridge is having their huge Black Friday sale. Head to RIDGE.com to get up to 47% off your order. This is by far the biggest discount they've given all year. That's Ridge.com for up to 47% off your order during their biggest sale of the year. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them the DTFH sent you. So now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, the bitter Buddha himself, Eddie Pepitone. Eddie Pepitone, welcome. Thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Thanks for having me. It's been too long, my friend.
It has been too long. We tried a little bit, but it's hard, man.
It's hard. I was just talking to a friend about, you know, the intensity of schedules and just the intensity of life, like how much we have to do as comedians, you know. Other people, you know, screw them. I think people who aren't in show business are cowards. I've always said this, that if you're not in show
very
business...
Very popular opinion. That's very popular.
And I'm talking about everybody, firemen, policemen, yeah. Like they're just cowards.
I think that's what Obama ran on for both of his elections, isn't it? That concept.
Yes, he was like, it was the Broadway platform. Like, you know, if you're not in a play, you're not living. But anyway, it's the tyranny of like the tyranny of like all the stuff we have to do because of the internet. For instance, we have to promote, like, it's like, it seems like it's endless work to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, go on Twitter, go on Facebook, promote, you know, like say, be funny on all these forms, all these social media forms.
Yeah. There's that pressurized, I think that's one of those things where when that thought oozes into my mind, before yeah. shame follows, thinking of the
shame is never far behind. Whatever I do, yeah. You know.
But I do think about that kind of like, you know, there's the comfort that comes from a job where you get a paycheck every 2 weeks,
yeah,
and you know for sure it's coming,
yeah.
That weird comfort you get. And it's a very nice comfort, too, where you know, like, shit, man, at the end of this 2 weeks,
yeah.
I'm getting this exact amount of money.
Right.
It's what I always get. I know where the money
is. I can't even
is.
Imagine that as you're talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Whereas for us, there's always this creeping feeling, you know.
Are we ever going to get any money again?
Yeah. Will it happen again? Is this going to keep happening? Or
yeah.
are we at the precipice of destruction and that you know that can be a real mind fuck.
It's amazing how you have to kind of put all that in abeyance and like leave it and just trust, like, okay, I'm just gonna do what I do and then just trust that it's all gonna be okay. That's a big issue for me, is trust. I'm always trying to control everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, if I do this, then I'm pretty sure I'll get this. And you know what? Never fucking happens.
Never happens.
The way I think it should, You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If I tweet this about my album, then I'm going to get all these people to get this album. No way.
No way.
Doesn't happen like that.
I've noticed that the things tend to work out more for me when I am spending time on things that don't have anything to do with what I want to succeed. There seems
I think
to be
you're this, right about that.
It's a weird law of friction or something where yeah. if you apply a repetitive action like a meditation practice, exercise, yeah. daily writing, or any kind of thing like that, if you just apply this kind of repetitive action, then other parts of your life start heating up. And my friend Mikey was telling me he saw in a I don't know what weird movie he saw, but one of the characters was giving advice to the other character, and he said, if you do any one thing every day, if you've come up with anything to do, no matter how absurd the act is, and he gave the example of pouring a glass of water into the toilet every morning, if you just do that and stick to that every day, magic will start happening in your life.
Interesting. Interesting. That must be something about discipline. Like when you're disciplined, that form that you bring into your life enables other things to come into it somehow. Like by adhering to a form, it enables content to come through. Whereas if you're formless, I don't know. I can't figure it out.
And that formlessness is one of the dangers of being a comedian, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I kind of work form. Like I do a lot of formless stuff on stage in my stand-up. Like I like to like just go where my mind takes me. And sometimes that's a danger too because I'm not structuring anything. You know, and I feel lost. I feel lost.
How much of your act is planned out versus written?
You know, when I go on the road, I plan a lot of it because I feel like, well, I don't know this audience. When I'm here in LA, like which is my home base lately, I don't plan anything. But when I'm feeling a lot of love on the road, then I really kind of just go with everything as well. Like I can just be in my present moment, if I'm really feeling good.
You plan nothing.
Right. I try not to plan it. Like that's – no, I have stuff that I can go to because as you know, when you get in front of crowds, there can be a point where, holy shit, they're not going for this little mind bubble I'm into.
Yep.
And I can – you could panic and go, whoa, whoa, they're not digging the old Eddie. So let me go to this tried and true stuff. You know, you always have to have kind of a bag of tricks to go into.
Do you start with an opener usually or do you start with improv?
You know what? I always think it's a good idea to have a good, solid, like, opener, you know, so they're immediately with you.
Yeah.
Lately, I've taken to, you know, I just come screaming on stage, why do they keep taking Liam Neeson's kids? I mean, I understand they're filming Taken 4. Is it just that he's inattentive? Like, without even saying hello, I think that's a cool way to, like, whoa, the audience is like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't care about us, and I love that. He's so confident. You kind of have to instill confidence in people, right? If you come out like, hi.
Yeah.
Well, this is a funny, weird thing, huh?
Yeah, people, that's the one that people do respond to confidence. It's almost like confidence is more important than being funny, and that's one of the evil. That's like the black magic comedians are the ones who figured out that if they just emote this confidence, they can get away with so much. You know,
that's true. It's almost like people are laughing at their rhythm and tone instead of the content, which is the opposite of what stand-up should be in a way, but that's the way it goes, right?
Well, yeah. But it does seem like technically on paper, stand-up is supposed to be about sort of well-written jokes.
Yeah.
But then when you think about it, sometimes confidence is one of the funniest things ever in the sense that we are in a universe where everything is going to die, dissolve, be destroyed. The profession of comedian is come on, it's like, what are you doing, really? You're hypnotized. It's a form of like, it's like,
yeah, that's a great way to put it. Like, it's a form of hypnotism, and, yeah. And it really is. And again, getting back to the trust issue, it's like the confidence is based in the fact that you trust that you're funny enough, just as is. But that's a tough thing to do for me sometimes when I'm traveling, because travel takes it out of me. And I've been traveling a lot. Like, I get on fucking planes. Like, I get on, you know, an 8 a.m. flight out of LAX, and I could just be, you know, really kind of tired and stuff. And, you know, sometimes I feel shaky when I'm overtired. And it's like I don't have that, like, confidence or trust in that I'm funny, because I don't feel funny. You know what I mean? And that's when, you know, material, like the material you know works, can, like, catapult you. Okay, they're with me. Okay, now I feel good again, you know?
Yeah, you need that. You need that feeling of that initial launch pad feeling of like, okay, they like me. Now I can fully be myself.
Right. It's the same thing as being an insurance adjuster. If you walk into your office and you are like, oh, boy, there's no coffee. Darn it. Where are my pencils?
Yeah.
Damn it. That's it. You know, you're going to, other people in the office, and I'm sure all the insurance adjusters listening to this are going to be like, yeah, that's I wonder if people think I'm really arrogant, you know, like, boy, he really thinks comedians are the be-all and end-all.
I promise you that there are a few people out there who think that you're arrogant, because on the internet, there is at least like 5% of any people consuming media on the internet are the most poisonous cunts that like, yeah. I've
run into a few of those on the internet, and it's kind of disturbing, but.
Well, they're disturbing. And kind of like, is an individual that the troll, the classic troll, is an individual, is like, it's like getting to see like a very deadly asp at the zoo. And you're like, this glass is separating me from this asp. And you look at it. But then when it gets sinister is when you imagine what would happen if by some accident in the universe, by some catastrophe, any one of these people managed to get real power, just so you know, then we enter into,
you mean like Dick Cheney?
exactly.
And his ilk. All the people who run the war machine.
They did it.
And the media,
they did it. But I'll tell you, man, in some ways, and this is a forgive me for saying this, but in some ways I would almost rather Dick Cheney have control over a nuclear arsenal than some internet trolls who have tweeted to me. Because Dick Cheney,
you don't think Dick Cheney started criticizing like people like Louis C.K.? Yeah, right. Imagine if that's how like Paul Wolfowitz got started.
In the early days, and you look back at Wolfowitz's tweets.
And he was just going after Carlin and Pryor.
Yeah. You insufferable hack. I don't know who you think you are. You're just an insufferable hack.
Insufferable hack.
But that's the other aspect of the internet troll, is that the language choices that they make are straight out of Days of Our Lives. They always talk like a soap opera millionaire would talk. For some reason, that's their affect.
Oh, yeah.
I never in my life have I encountered such an insufferable hack.
You know, do you engage them?
No,
I know some comics love fucking with them, which I think is great. But I'm one of these guys, I can't engage them because, you know, I just feel the attacks too personally sometimes. And I'm just like, because whenever I've engaged them, it always turns out to be a bad thing.
Just like when you invite a vampire into your house. It's the exact same concept. You never invite a vampire into your house, and you generally, unless it's like...
Unless you have a lot of garlic.
A lot of garlic, or you're just ready to go, or you've got some info on the troll that they're not aware of, like you've gone a little bit deeper so you know their real name, for example, or you can connect somebody to their job, then you can if you want to like really do it. But ultimately, even that activity will only lead to more negativity in your life. So I have the moment I get a dart from somebody, I just block. Or even better,
that's what I do.
Better than blocking, muting. I saw somebody tweet about how the satisfaction they get from knowing that the trolls think that they're getting through, and it's just going into a...
Oh, how do you do that?
You can just press the little gear and click mute.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, so they think that they're like, you make me...
Oh, that's nice. I didn't know about the mute thing.
Yeah, so that's another way to really... So, like, if that's another way to torment the trolls is they
Do you get a lot of it?
No, thank... Well, no, because... I think I don't get a lot of it because I have a troll blocking policy, which is I immediately block them. And I think by now there's right. very few left.
Right, right,
you
right.
You know, I just immediately just, oh, right. okay, you're, right. you, oh, you wish that my, your hope is that my mother suffered the most painful death that anyone ever suffered. Oh, I'll just block you from my existence forever.
It would be funny if you were one of these people, and there are people like this who go, I want to thank you for your response about my mother's death, but I disagree, but thank you for your input. That's another way to fuck with them. Thank you so much for your comments. So I've often felt that way about my mother as well, so I understand that you could feel this way.
I like the one of my favorite verses from the Bible. Maybe it's not even a verse. I just heard it in an action movie. Is vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I love that because it means really any vengeance that you think you can inflict upon your enemies is obviously going to be such a weak. Vengeance compared to the vengeance that they're already that is already being inflicted upon themselves. Right?
I always say that, you know, I always say that punishment in this world is immediate. Like, in other words, if you throw out negative energy, you're already cutting yourself off from life.
Yes.
Right? And I've done it, you know. I've attacked you online without you knowing it. You know what I mean? Like,
I've attacked you too, Eddie.
You block me, but...
I actually make many... We find out that we're just the only trolls attacking each other. We both are making fake accounts, and we've been attacking each other nonstop.
We are the only two trolls on the internet. That's the twist of this whole conversation, is that we are responsible for all negative YouTube comments.
How amazing would that be? How amazing.
We barely have time to do this podcast.
Yeah, I got to get back. We're actually looking at our phones right now, putting...
I got to get on Yelp and slam a Mexican restaurant.
But think of that impulse. I like to think about that impulse because, you know, man, this actually... reminds me of something I was thinking, which is that the object of hate, right? So you have like a Twitter critic or a Yelp critic or whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
The object of hate is like the top of a weed, right? So if you have, if you like consider like everybody has, or most people have, not everyone, many people have probably a top three list of people that come into their mind and they think about in a negative way. Like, that person's a fucking prick. Some people have lists of, like, hundreds. But I'm going to guess that a lot of people have three recurring characters in their mind that when those people pop in, there's usually a negative feeling. Or there's, like, I've noticed certain people have a person they like to bring up in conversation. Like, you know, blah, 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 did that again.
Yeah, yeah.
That thing, right?
Yeah.
And I know I've been that.
Me too. Me too.
So
gossipy shit.
Gossipy shit. And usually there's, like, one sort of character, the symbol for all bad things.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you follow that character down, like if you look deeper into that character, don't the roots of that thing always lead to a kind of undigestible thing inside of yourself?
Absolutely.
Where you're identical to that person, but you can't accept the fact that you have those.
Where you're identical, that's interesting. So you're basically hating yourself?
Oh, yeah.
You're hating on yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, that's a good, like, you're attacking a person. But the reason you're attacking them is because you embody that exact quality that you're attacking.
Exactly.
And you don't know it, though.
Yeah. You don't. Well, you can't accept it. Right. You don't know it. You do kind of know it. If you just – that's why meditation is great, right? Because if you spend just a little bit of time sitting still – and this is another cool thing I like about this idea is that – all of a sudden it turns all of these symbolic entities in your head that you'd loathe and despise into X marks the spot on the treasure map where it's like, oh, dig there, because if you dig in those spots, it's like giving Nancy Grace a map of a forest where toddlers are buried and how happy that would make her. She would be out there every day with the cameras digging up a new toddler corpse in the same way you dig down into those X's where your enemies in your mind exist or your nemesis or people you think are bad. And you always will find that it's like, oh, not only it's usually it's like I'm that person, but I'm angry at the person in the external world because they're less subtle than I am, you know? And
well, here's the thing, too, is I heard that ego, our ego, always needs something to hate and to fight. We always, our ego, in order to survive, our ego, which seems to run 99.9% of the planet, ego instead of the real self, you know, when people listen to your podcast, I think will know what I'm talking about. And if they don't, I think right now they should go kill it. No, our ego needs enemies. Yeah. Because if our ego doesn't have enemies, it's got nothing. In other words, we think we're quote unquote great or special because there are other people who aren't. We can only think we are great or special in comparison.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's it, for sure. Yeah.
And that's why we attack others so we can feel good about ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if we don't attack others, then we have to just sit there and go, I've got a lot of issues with things. Like really face the truth of it. In other words, by attacking others, here's the crux of it. By attacking others, you don't have to face the truth about yourself.
Yeah, that's it. It keeps you well in
right?
Yeah, I think so. And your attack on the others or your mental attack, because usually most people are not overtly attacking a person, and maybe they are doing it anonymously through Twitter, through Yelp reviews or whatever, but ultimately it's like an anonymous, but really the when you consider just the neurological framework for an enemy, it means that somewhere in your brain on the molecular level is some kind of chemical pattern which represents whoever the person is that you think did you wrong. You are literally, you know, it's like a little in the circuitry of your mind, there is a circuit or two that your mind has sewn together or plugged in which represent, it's a representational neurological corollary for a thing that exists in the external universe. So you are literally hating yourself in the sense that that particular reflection that's been captured chemically in your brain is a reflection in your own brain. And that sector of your brain that is meshed or formed the image of the thing that you hate most in the world, you are literally hating that sector of your own brain.
Because it's trippy. And I though have a problem with, because you know, I do that. Like, I have a problem with people's success. And I look at this, like when I see other like comedians, other particular comedians get some big thing, I always like, I immediately think, God damn, like my first thought is fuck. And that's so ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think their success is somehow a reflection of me not being as successful or something like that. Like, in other words, their success means, fuck, there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
But I will hate on them and hate on the system. But where I do have a problem with stuff is when I think I really do have a reason to, like, hate the government, hate the military establishment, hate the Wall Street establishment that, you know, creates poverty and suffering. I'm thinking, well, that is a good thing to hate. And I don't know if hate is the right thing even at that level.
Well, yeah.
What do you think of that? And it's draining and it's negative. That's what I'm dealing with lately.
Yeah, well, I think it's exactly goes back to the same thing that you were saying before, which is that this is all distraction techniques that you're using to try to turn your eye inward to find out where the little poisonous nugget is inside of you. You know, like the The inevitable tweet from an animal rights person of the inside of a seagull's stomach. Mm-hmm. Inevitably, at least once a month, someone will tweet, mm-hmm. they dissected a seagull. Mm-hmm. Look what these, they're eating mm-hmm. your trash. So mm-hmm. inside mm-hmm. the seagull, mm-hmm. wedding ring, mm-hmm. condom, mm-hmm. hypodermic needle. Can't digest these things. And so in the same way, it's like, I think the psyche is like that, where there are all these things that you, that are inside of you, the desire mm-hmm. for power, the desire for control, the desire to conquer.
It would be funny if we cut open a seagull and we found the desire for power, the desire for control. Like, holy shit, do you see what's in this seagull? No, but I have a problem, though, because I am a big animal rights activist. And they are abused. They are abused, and they are, now literally they are. So what do you do with that anger at that?
Well, it's never. I mean, anger is. I very rarely have I seen an angry person
get anything done.
It almost delegitimizes a person when they're like raging.
But anger fuels some of the anger. Is a fuel if used properly.
Well, yeah, I mean,
for good, if you can, you have to be an alchemist, you know. Use the anger that you feel, you know, the injustice in the world to the powerless. That's my thing. Like, I think picking on the powerless.
I think that is the equivalent of fossil fuels. Anger is the psychological fossil fuels. It's incredibly powerful. It will get a lot of shit done. But ultimately, it's polluting your own environment to get these things done so that...
But here's my thing, and I've been asking this to a couple people, you know, like, how do you stay aware in the world, like, aware of what is happening, you know, like, the war machine, the war on terror, you know, all the people in poverty because of the inequality of wealth. How do you stay aware and know why that is and yet not get furious at it?
Oh man,
do you just not give a shit?
No, you
yeah, and you're like, ah, fuck it, you know, it's the way, like, that's the thing, like, I think, like, for, you know, like, when people say, ah, that's, it's just what is, you know, well, doesn't that then abdicate you of, you know, all this responsibility?
Here's a question for you. What's the most positive, one of the most positive things in your life right now?
My dogs.
I knew you were going to say that.
You did?
Yes. And the
and they're just unconditional love.
Yeah. And think about the impact that has on you being around these beings who they're not, you know, they're intelligent in a different way, but they don't have human level intelligence, but the healing power.
Thank God.
Thank God. But the healing power of that love that comes out of them unconditionally. For me, like when I come home, if I'm feeling freaked out and this little poodle and my little chihuahua meet me at the door and they're dancing.
I know, they're dancing.
They're dancing.
That's a great way to put it. And they just dance when you come home.
Yeah, and that feeling of poison that was inside of me, if there was one when I'm coming in, it is like lessened. It's an immediate healing force.
So
think of the impact that these little guys have on your subjective universe with only loving you. So in the same way, if you think of the impact you could have on the world and all these things in the world that you that are disturbing you, if you could figure out a way to actually, honestly, not holier than thou bullshit love, but in some way you could beam that same kind of love in the direction of all these things that are so awful, including the seagull murders, or even worse.
The seagull murders.
The fucking asshole.
Ladies and gentlemen, please do not adjust your sets. The seagull murders will be right back.
Or ISIS, you know, like, think of, like, these pictures of ISIS.
Yeah.
They're like, I saw this awful footage of these bastards cutting the throat of this woman, the shirtless woman, and draining her blood into a bowl because she was a Christian. How do you love that, right? How do you love that?
I don't know how you do. Do you?
Well, I think that it has to start.
But genuinely love, not intellectually say, okay, I'm sending love to that, but really heartfeltly being able to take that in, that brutality, and then transforming it, You know what I mean? What does Ram Dass say about that stuff? I know he has stuff to say about that.
Well, Ram Dass's foundation is called the Love Serve Remember Foundation. So,
boy, is that arrogant. Go ahead. the guy trolling the Ram Dass Love Serve Foundation.
Oh God, they do that. You know,
hey, Ram Dass, nice. Hey, you know what I wish on you?
No, I got one of those, you know, because I'm doing podcasts at this retreat coming up, and I already got this terse tweet from somebody going,
nothing worse than a terse tweet. Oh, a TT, I call them.
I got a TT. And the TT was, so I can't remember. I'm sure this is going to be more than however many characters you're allowed, but it was the thing was, how come some of the major universities allow people to go there for free? But the Ram Dass retreats charge money for people to come if they want to go to the retreat.
Oh, the money angle. Yeah.
Yeah. But the response to this is, name the university that's giving away free Hawaiian vacations, because that's what this is. It's a Hawaiian vacation. And if you can find a place where you're getting that for free, or that weird idea that...
How much is it, by the way?
$70,000.
I think it's a bit much. And I would send a terse tweet.
Can you put a price on awakening, Eddie?
I'd like to... Here's the commercial for that. Hello, I'm Ram Dass. Have you been awakened? If not, come on down. Come on down and get awakened here in Hawaii. $70,000 and you're done. You're done. You're enlightened. All your baggage is gone. You're hating people no more. You ain't hating anybody no more. Come on down. We're open 24 hours.
Yeah, the idea is... Mm. Love everyone. So Neem Karoli,
so hard.
Love everyone. Tell the truth. Love everyone and tell the truth. That's what Neem Karoli Baba said to Ram Dass. Ram Dass,
his guru,
Neem Karoli Baba. There's a great story because Alpert Ram Dass was a really angry guy in India. He was like around all these people who had been drawn into the gravity of this. Neem Karoli Baba, and I think
he sensed all their bullshit, all their ego.
Yeah, he didn't like them. He started hating them, he freaked out, and like I think he like threw something, or he just had this fit. And because basically a guru, you know, everyone thinks that a guru is someone where you get around them, and it's like. I think that, they either think a guru is someone you get around and they end up like having sex with your wife and destroying your life.
Right.
Which is,
that happens.
Which is not a true guru.
That's not a true guru.
That's a,
unless he's really satisfying your wife.
$70,000.
Then you got to tip your hat to him.
thank you. So the theory behind the thing, and I have never been around, you know, I've never been around a being like Neem Karoli Baba. I only know about them from stories. But the idea is that they are – because they understand them – they've gone through the work, countless incarnations, understand themselves all the way through, have forgiven themselves all the way through. They're capable of understanding you all the way through, seeing the nuggets of indigestible psychic shit floating around in the lower levels of your ecosystem, and recognizing those things and seeing them not as a reason to hate you, but as actually something that they can convert and heal by emanating this love. Now, I'm adding all this mind shit to them. What people say about this guy is that when you got around him, it was just like being around a nuclear blast of love. And it was just you're around him and you just are that shit inside of you that you've hated yourself for. He seems to be able to see it.
Yeah.
He loves it. He loves you. And something about that creates this healing, because if this guy loves you, you're going to start loving yourself too.
Yeah.
And then from loving yourself, that's when you're able to start loving everybody else, because you can't do it until you love yourself. If you don't love yourself and you're down on yourself and you hate yourself and you loathe things about you, then all that's going to happen is everyone around you is going to, you're going to hate them too. How could you not? It's like it's like having a water filter with shit inside of it. Mm-hmm. Your water is always going to taste like shit. Mm-hmm. So that's the So yeah, I think you can do it, but it, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of people talk about this all the time, which is like, when do you fight? When do you pick up the gun?
Right.
When do you kill?
Right.
When is there war? When is it okay to go to war? When do you,
right.
when, how do you, can you love and kill? The Bhagavad Gita set on a battlefield.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like, is it?
Yeah, yeah. And the real wisdom is, I think the real wisdom is there really isn't a time, like no fight. Don't fight. Like, I love the word surrender. Yeah. I love that word. Like, sometimes when I'm just flipping out, no, I'm just, and I flip out a lot, meaning I just have so many fucking thoughts. Like, it's just, look at this. Oh, what the fuck? Hey, there's a hummingbird. That's beautiful. Hummingbirds are really, really fucking beautiful. But what the fuck is over here? Why is this fucking fence? It's just the most minute. It's just the most trivial shit. Why is this fence like, who the fuck left a fence like this in the middle of the fucking road? I just go, and then and then from there I'm like, boy, I had a good tweet a couple of minutes ago. On and on and on. And then I think of one word, surrender. And that sometimes word, like sometimes attached to a word is a healing vibe. Love. It doesn't have the same, it doesn't have the thing I need right now. I think different words, you know, certain words too in certain times of your life. But right now for me, it's surrender. Like, I just want to surrender, you know, to everything, because I've been fighting everything for so long.
The greatest quote I ever heard at one of these Ram Dass retreats is from Saraswati Marcus, who teaches the yoga classes there.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge between suffering and grace is surrender. Isn't that cool?
The bridge between suffering and grace
is surrender. Yeah. Because, yeah, you know, grace, of course, being that place where the synchronicities are happening, the birds are singing, suddenly you're back in the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
And suffering being the essential state of the human condition. And then the moment you release, that you do just give up the fight. Like, you just give up. You give up the big battling, the big wrestling match that you're having with.
It's tough because, you know, guy like me, I grew up in an unsafe environment, and I've carried that with me. So I always feel like I have to be on guard, protecting, you know, my family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's the opposite, I think. You should be alert, but you don't have to be like, who is that? Oh, hi, Al. It's always like that, too. I'm always like, who? What do you want? What? Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. It's like, on one level, because all these all these things are happening at once. So, like, on one level, you're being devoured by the universe.
We are going to die.
You're actively dying right now. Just the
brief. All right, take it easy.
No, trust me. Are you done with your tea? Did you finish the tea I gave
trust
you?
Trust me.
If you drink that tea, you're dying.
You ever hear the Course in Miracles?
Yeah.
Where they say nothing real ever dies. And you, meaning your ego, was never born.
Yeah.
It's all just life.
That's grace.
That's
grace. And that's where you want to get. And you are there right now, but because the focus happens to generally land on the
Can I just say this? Please buy my new album. No. I'm kidding. No, because that's the trip, you know, that the ego gets in. It's like, yeah, you know what keeps you from grace is like me. Yeah. I got this going on. Even the quote unquote good shit is a total trap. I got this going on. I got this going on. Yeah. I got this. I'm doing this. I am this. I am this. And they just tell you to say I am, not I am this or that.
Do you do Course in Miracles work a lot?
No. But when I'm all spun out and I'm on the computer and I'm having to do shit, I'll Google in Course in Miracles. And yesterday I just looked at it, and their basic message
is to realize that your thoughts are just total bullshit.
Yeah.
All of them. All of them.
Yeah.
You know, just all of your fucking, you know, all thinking, you know, I need to say, you know, obviously you have to think to get things. You have to, like, have practical thinking. But when you start getting it, wrapping it up in, you know, ego and stuff, and the way we see, they deal with a lot of Course in Miracles, like, our perceptions are completely prejudiced. Like, we never see the tree for what it really is.
Yeah.
We see what we think is a tree because we have a preconception of a tree. You know, that's how they work. They kind of try to retrain your mind to let go of all preconceptions and just be here now.
How often do you hit places like that in your life?
I try to do it at least a couple times a week, 3 times a week, 4 times a week, 5 times a week, 6 times a week, 7 times a week. No, every day I have to do something spiritual. My friend Eddie, another friend of mine, is like, you know what? People like us, meaning really tightly wound people, he said, if we don't fucking do spiritual shit every day, we're fucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me, you know, when you're tightly wound, man, you got to combat that shit.
Well, it's like, you know, when people say you go off your meds.
Yes.
It's like go off your meditation. It's the same,
same
thing.
Same. That's great, by the way.
Same.
I'm off my meds, meaning meditation.
I'm not meditating, and whatever that means for you. But if you're not taking a little bit of time each day.
Yeah.
But this is like, you know, I think this is one of the – this is a cool thing. One of the things I love about the teachings Ram Dass gives is this very gentle thing where he says, listen – if you're off your meds, if you're not meditating, if you're not being spiritual,
yeah.
if you're not doing whatever, just watch that too. Study
yeah.
that
don't,
pattern.
Don't judge it. That's yeah. another thing. There's 3 things they say not to do every day. Do not judge. Do not attach. And do not resist.
Cool.
If you could do one of those 3 things for a minute –
yeah.
each day.
Yeah.
Like, don't attach to anything. Meaning, okay, this is a stupid, mundane example, but what I do, like, if you tweet something, don't expect, you know, people to love you and say how great this tweet. Just tweet it and don't attach to
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be funny using Twitter as a complete metaphor for spirituality. Well,
they would. He would have. Buddha would have done that for sure because he – and that is a really beautiful thing about Buddhism is that it all gets used. Like
right.
anything in the external universe could totally be used. Buddha definitely would have tweeted and he definitely would have had some kind of – there would be the scripture of the tweets or there'd be the
yeah.
tweeting
scripture. Well, you know what tweeting – it's all just that there's a Leviathan of technology right now. I mean, just technology and the particularly specifically digital internet age that we live in is all consuming. It's a huge thing to deal with. It's consuming people. I mean, there's been studies about how it's rewiring the brain. I mean, it's consuming people. You know, it's I mean, talk about the ego. Talk about instant gratification. That's an enemy too, and I'm really, really susceptible to that. Like I love instant gratification. Like, I just want to be pleasured. And pleasure is a trap.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want pain, right? And pleasure and pain are 2 sides of the same coin. You've heard that,
yes.
right? It's like, so if I constantly want pleasure, which is my fucking Achilles heel, and I guess a lot of people's, but I want pleasure. You know, I want to go on now. I want to go online. I want to look at porn. And then I want to, and then I want to buy things online. And then I want to, you know, look at how great I am online. And you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
That's a fucking trap, man. Because you're, you know, I don't know, the enlightenment, the stillness, the grace. Grace is not pleasure.
What is it?
Go fuck yourself. I don't know. You tell me. This
know.
Is your podcast.
I don't know.
The hell is this?
I don't know.
Grace is not pleasure. Grace is, what is it? Grace is just being absolutely fine with what is. instead of being like, see, pleasure, and I get overstimulated. Like, you know what I mean? I think the digital age and all this computer stuff and everything at our fingertips, it overstimulates us and ultimately makes us fucking miserable and drains us.
Yeah, it gets you out of your head for sure. Or gets you out of your heart into your head. It's all mental. When you're online, you're generally always in your head.
I think so, yeah.
But this, you know, I really love this practice of mindfulness because the idea is, even when you're in your head, you know, there's all these great, like,
yeah.
I can't remember the scripture. It's in this, I'm reading this great book, Mindfulness by Joseph Goldstein. I've been reading it forever.
Oh,
it's amazing.
Yeah, I know that book.
It's great.
Is that a great one?
It's great. But sort of commentary on the scripture that the idea of mindfulness emerged from, I'm sure it emerged from a lot of scriptures.
What particularly, mindfulness basically just means being the witness to what you're thinking.
Right.
And that's always difficult for me too. That is a very difficult thing. It's a basic tenet of mindfulness, but it's always so hard for me to step back from my thoughts because I believe I am my thoughts.
Well, there's an aspect to it called noting where instead of trying to step back from your thoughts, which is another trap,
you're enlightening me now that's what I do.
Because then think about that when you're stepping back from your thoughts, it's like you're running away from yourself, and there's the implicit judgment that this part of me must be malfunctioning. Now you're sort of
okay. So tell me what's to be done.
Okay, so
God, I'm glad I came here.
Impenetrable. There's different states of mind. You use this kind of noting, and so you would think like. So when you have an impenetrable mind, when you're in a state of this is not going to get better, I feel so awful and shitty today, it's not getting better.
Yeah. The definition of depression is what that is.
Impenetrable. So you would think
an absolute like
I'm stuck for good here.
Stuck, yeah.
So then you would think, "Oh, I'm stuck." And that's it. And then when you're not stuck, and you're in a flowing, open, graceful mind, graceful mind. And then when you're sitting and meditating, when I'm breathing in, I'm breathing in. When I'm breathing out, I'm breathing out. So it's just a very basic sort of not trying to change the state. If your mind's going crazy and you're up in your head and it's all going nuts,
right.
It's not step back. It's just be aware of like, oh, mind going crazy.
Right.
When mind
note it.
That's called noting. And when the mind isn't going crazy, you think, oh, mind not going crazy. And even those labels are considered to be an intermediary state to get you to this place of, which now is theoretical for me, but it's the idea is universe perfect. We exist in a perfect universe, non-malfunctioning universe. I am part of the universe. Therefore, if the universe is perfect, then I am perfect. And I'm not perfect because of what I'm going to be after a million lifetimes of meditating. I'm perfect because of where I am right now. And every single thought that I'm having or the proliferation of thoughts is also a part of a perfect universe. And the surrender would be not trying to change those things, but just being like, this is what's happening. Look at it go. Look at the thoughts go. Here we go again. Here it comes. And then somehow from that, just awareness of the thing, it does begin to
shift.
But it's
interesting.
Not
I think that's the, you know, don't judge, don't resist, don't attach. I think that's don't resist what's going on in your head, and don't judge it. You know,
don't treat it the way that your parents treated you when you were being bad, because that's what you do to the thoughts. Is you're just like you look at you. Whatever it is that you digested.
Yeah, because meditation, I think, like I have an on-again, off-again thing. When people ask me if I'm meditating, I just do like the Facebook relationship thing. I say it's complicated.
Yeah.
And I have a complicated relationship with meditation because I think I judge it too much. Like you just nailed it with it's like my parent, like being a parent, a disapproving parent. You're sitting there, you're breathing, and I swear to God, this is probably why I don't meditate, because when I'm sitting there and just breathing, I'm going, you stupid fuck, look at this shit. You know, and it's painful and hard.
You know what? Forgive me for saying this, those of you guys out there who are into Chogyam Trungpa, but I think Chogyam Trungpa, who is this Tibetan
I know Trungpa.
He would say, when you said that, I think he would be like, this is for you, because that honest assessment of your mind state when you're sitting down is exactly what he said is the beginning of a practice. And he said that when you first start meditating, if you don't see, he doesn't say if you don't, but it's like, it's ridiculous. What you're doing is ridiculous. You're going to feel fraudulent. It's going to feel completely nuts. And all of those things are exactly what should be happening. And when you realize that there's no right way to meditate, but the thing that's just you're sitting, as Jack Kornfield says, you're taking your seat at the center of the world, at the center of the universe, and you're just letting what comes come, and you're letting what goes go, and you're becoming aware of the way that everything that arises also dissipates.
Mm.
It's just cool. You're watching.
But why are you saying Trungpa is saying something different than Kornfield?
I think they have different teaching styles. I think they're both saying the same thing, but
right.
different ways of getting to it.
I think so too.
Yeah. Trungpa is very fierce. Trungpa's style is fierce. He's very
Is he the one who wrote Spiritual Warrior?
I think so. Yes, he is. And he wrote Meditation in Action. Which I like. I've got a bunch of lectures by him, and I get really mad at him sometimes because of his ferocity when it comes to when it comes to practice. Because I talked about Kornfield. I did a podcast from the retreat in Maui and talked to Kornfield about that very thing.
What did he say?
I'm sorry if I'm misquoting, but he said, Trungpa can be a bummer sometimes, huh? That's all. He's just like a downer.
Wow.
He's like, Trungpa can be a downer sometimes,
yeah.
huh? And you know, he was like, you know, here's Kornfield, this glowing, focused, sweet person. And
yeah.
here you are in Maui, you know, enjoying the beauty of this retreat. And I've been reading this Trungpa stuff. And he's saying, like, no matter what, wherever you think you've landed, like the awakening state, whenever you get to a place where you're like, ah, this is it, or if you're experiencing this kind of like this ineffable joy state, you're just tricking yourself. That's not it. That's not it. That's just another delusion that you're allowing yourself to have to escape from the essence of what the problem is, which is that you're nothing. You're nothing. And you're trying to escape from the nothingness. My favorite example being like, it's
this stuff gets so crazy
it
sometimes.
It gets crazy. But he compares it to somebody standing on a floor made of razor blades. And it's so painful that to escape this experience, you fabricate an illusion, which is whatever your ego, identity, life is. You climb into that thing and you make it your home and you live in this kind of delusional thing. And so he says it's like, you know, a lot of people, they actually deify their confusion by saying, it's so great that it's beyond words. It's so great that I can't possibly understand it. It's so great that there's no way to describe it. And he's like, that is insanity. What you are saying is that you're worshiping your own insanity. Your inability to label a thing does not make the thing suddenly glorious.
Right.
It just means that you are... But you know, again, he's very fierce when it comes to that, and I think that his disciple Pema Chodron is a better at dispensing.
I've listened to her. I go in and out of digging her stuff. Like, well, first of all, it's so funny. I don't know if you've ever caught this, but some meditators, I think, try to be funny. It's almost like Rachel Maddow doing the news, if you've ever watched her. Like, she thinks she's funny for some reason.
She tries to kind of, like, she tries to do a, like, Jon Stewart.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing? You know, you're not funny. Just, you know, I like your politics.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be funny. And whoever told you were funny is wrong. And sometimes when I'm listening to Pema Chodron, she's also trying to...
like she's getting, it's just so funny as a comedian listening to this, live lectures and when she's in front of people and, you know, joking about that pesky ego and everybody's laughing. I'm like, oh God, this is so not.
You're talking about, fuck, there's a name our friends came up with for that. Which is the kind of like, spiritual comedy.
It's just too precious sometimes. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, you're not, you know, I don't
know. You know what makes it okay, man, is that when you listen to it on a tape and you're a comedian, you're going to recognize the shitty jokes. Just because that's your job, right? Your job is to come out. You've been doing it your whole life.
Yeah.
But when you see it in person, the thing about it is, man, these people, they are blasting out this energy that comes from a lifetime of practice.
Yeah.
Skeptics, roll your eyes all you want. I'm telling you, when you get around these people, they're putting something out there.
That's beautiful.
It's beautiful. And so suddenly the bad jokes – you just get immediately forgiven in the same way you'd forgive.
Yeah, I hear you. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm being kind of catty as a comic. But
you can be, though. That's the whole thing. Be fucking catty. The other beautiful thing about these people is that my experience with them thus far is that I have yet to be able to really offend them. And if I
do... That's great.
And if in the times where it seems like maybe something like that has happened, it always is followed by this laugh, this wonderful, honest laugh where they're just like, what? Whatever.
My only thing is, you know, like Pema Chodron, she gives these talks from a place, a beautiful place called Plum Village, right?
That's Thich Nhat Hanh.
Thich Nhat Hanh, but Pema Chodron is there as well.
Oh, is she there? I didn't know she hung out there.
And my thing is that I think it's far easier to be, quote unquote, in a state of grace in a place like Plum Village than it is to be in Los Angeles. Like when I leave this taping session, I have to get in a car and get on the 5 and, you know.
Have you ever done a float tank?
No, I'm scared to do a float tank.
Why?
I'm scared to do a float tank.
Why?
Well, I have claustrophobia.
Right. Well,
and I feel like I would lose, this is funny, I feel like I would lose my mind.
See, here's the thing. Think of a float tank. If there's ever a place, I can't think of a place much safer than a float tank.
Really?
You're in a few inches of water, laying on your back. You're in incredibly buoyant water, heated to body temperature.
Why does that panic me?
Well, because what's happening is you're removing all the external universe and witnessing completely your internal state of turmoil without anything to blame it on. You're just like,
wow.
And so the idea that at Plum Village, or a place that's actually stripping away the distraction mechanism, somehow that's going to make you more peaceful. I think that's...
Not necessarily.
I think it's going to make you freak out even more because instead of having the thing to escape into, now there's really no way to avoid it.
You know, that's a good fucking point.
Yeah, you freak the fuck out at these things, man. Like the first few retreats, Ram Dass retreats I went to, which are really apparently compared to other retreats like Vipassana and all those 10-day hardcore meditation retreats.
Boot camp.
These Ram Dass retreats, the first couple, man, I was on my phone constantly.
Were you?
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't deal with it.
Looking in there every time.
You couldn't deal with the love. Silence.
Couldn't deal with the love.
Oh, the love. Fuck.
Love is hard.
Yeah, that's a good point. In my head, these flotation tanks, I always just feel like I don't know what the fuck it is with me and enclosed spaces, you know?
Well, I think all of us have very turbulent states. And it's funny the thing you're saying, like, because my mind does the same thing. Fucking whoever it is in their goddamn spiritual teaching. Yeah, you know what? Put me on a fucking cloud, floating me in space, put me in a nice temple with some incense burning and gongs everywhere, and I'm gonna be spiritual too.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, let's put you there, and then let's see what happens. Because if you put me in a fucking temple with gongs and incense, let's start a timer, and I'll stop it the first time I find internet porn and jerk off, and I bet that timer's gonna be like what, 6 hours? You know?
I know, man.
That's the thing, man.
Is that habitual?
What?
that we do that? Is it? Is it?
It's just another form of escape.
Escape.
It's all. It's all. You know, trying to like. It's,
what are we so afraid of facing?
I think that it's probably different for everybody. You know, I think it's. I think what.
I think I know what mine is. What? That I'm insignificant. I think I want to be very significant. I don't know if that sounds weird, but I think that I want to be like fame, chasing fame. You know, I think that I need to feel like I'm making some kind of big impact on the world or I don't exist.
But why do you want to – what – maybe you're – maybe you think that you have to earn love.
I think so. Yes, I think that's even more to the crux of it, to the heart of it, is that I feel like just doing nothing and just being, that doesn't, I have not, you know, why do I deserve anything? Like I think that's really it. Like, I don't deserve, you know, love.
That's it. Yeah, you're going to earn love. You want it. So it's like you got it. You have created, as I have and most people I know have created a series of impossible acrobatic feats that you must do before you deserve love.
It'd be funny if right after this podcast I completely drop out of comedy and like just, you know, just I just go on a, you know, I just am like, fuck
that'd
it.
That'd be amazing.
Fuck it all.
You would be the...
No, because I realized that the only reason I want to be a comedian is to prop up this thing that I think I need instead of just feeling. Like, in other words, and I've heard this talked about before. If I felt truly worthwhile and truly loved, if I felt truly loved, why the fuck would I be getting in front of all these people trying to make them laugh all the time?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's. I think that what would happen is if you accepted the entire universe that you are significant, in fact, and that you're so significant that there is an entire universe of love around you, just dying for you to put down your the various force fields you've been putting up to keep it from loving you. Just like your mom, like your dad, like all your ancestors, like your dearest friend.
Who... No, hold it. Did you just attack my mother?
Yeah. Mom is horrible, Eddie. That's one of the things Ram Dass told me. It's weird because Ram Dass never tells me specifically to say things. But he was like, if you see Eddie Pepitone, tell him his mom's an asshole. Would you? I guess. I guess he knew it.
Boy, that's his one thing. He trolls my mother all the time, but.
but the thing that you realize is that the big wrestling match here is a wrestling match with love. Like you are the winning this wrestling match means existing in an emaciated state of not getting the love you need. That's winning the wrestling match.
That's winning.
So winning the wrestling match means that you don't get love.
Yeah.
Surrendering means that this entire universe, apparently this entire universe, it's like a person who seeks love through success is like a person who drinks water from a well, who goes up this long mountain where there's a well at the top with brackish water that they can drink from, when at the bottom of the mountain is just a lake filled with the sweetest water. And if they wanted to, they could sip it and drink it and swim in it and do whatever they want in it. That's what we do. Because God damn it, it fucking feels creepy to be completely loved because we don't love ourselves. And that weird little obstruction, that's the little... Isn't that that's the error in the lens, or that's the thing in the lens that's fucking us up? So I don't know, man. That's my wrestling matches. I can't accept.
I think you nailed it, man. And I get that. Here's the interesting thing about that too, is that I've had that insight before. And like all the major insights I get, even though I am getting better, I can't hold on to it. Like I realize that's the practice I need to practice. Ultimately, the practice is loving myself, and not in a really corny way, but just like being okay with who I am.
Yeah.
And that I am okay. I'm enough. Well, I'm enough, and I don't have to do, like you put it, these unbelievable acrobatic things every day to feel like Well, that, I've earned my existence.
Think if your poor dogs had to do that. Like, if before you pet your dogs, if before you told, if like your attitude to your dogs.
Some people do that to them. Like, beg, do this, roll over, like, you know?
Well, yeah, imagine that, though. If that's how you, like, if with my dog will shit on the floor and piss on the floor sometimes, mm-hmm. and I'll clean it up.
No, I noticed,
and I get mad. Yeah, he's good at it. I trained him to do it, actually, whenever you come over, Eddie. I've been
Ram Dass, that was his other thing. Train your dogs to shit when he arrives.
Yeah, he did say that. So weird, Eddie. I don't know how you know him.
Imagine if you had to do this with your dogs. You
but
were saying
you do that to yourself.
It's unreal, dude.
You
it's
an animal rights person. You a person who loves animals. You a person who gets so angry when people abuse animals. You being an animal because you're a human being.
Yeah.
You treat yourself in a way that you wouldn't even treat your dogs.
It's unbelievable.
What is that?
Well, I think too, like in my head, the external world. Meaning, you know, the people in it always need stuff from me and that I'm not delivering or something like that in my head.
Yeah, because you're...
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you're not giving it to yourself. And that...
Ah.
You know, the moment that you like, hit that... the moment you see that thing inside yourself that's so awful, whatever the thing is, which really isn't awful at all, but the moment you see it... You get to start working with it, right? So the moment you see it, first you've got to see it. And then when you see it, it's like, oh, okay, now I'm going to try, even though it's ridiculous and I don't feel it and it's an absurd attempt to love that thing. It's you'll realize that the impossibility of loving whatever you think the greatest enemy is in the world, it's an equal impossibility to loving yourself. You'll find that it's the identical, right? It's the same fucking thing. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Not only can I not love ISIS, I can't love the part of myself that has no integrity and is lazy. You know?
Like, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that thing. But if you can work with it, and start and just practice treating.
What does working with it mean?
The same thing as when you bring a rescue dog home. So it's like when you bring a rescue dog home, that poor little guy, he's been fucking kicked around his whole life. He's been like, you know, dislocated and fucked with and not enough food and emaciated and guaranteed that nugget in yourself that you hate so much, it came from the same goddamn thing.
You know what's amazing? Here's the amazing thing about all this is that it's us who has to heal. Like, we have to heal ourselves.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of a catch-22 there. Because the reason why we're fucked up is because of who we are or who we've been conditioned. Conditioned is the better word. Who we've been conditioned to be. And we've got to unravel that somehow and start, like, being a good parent to ourselves.
Yeah, just treat it like a rescue dog, man. It's like you were able to be loving to your rescue dogs. You know, you were able to love that little guy or girl, and I guarantee that sweetie was not like a bundle of joy when you first took them home. So sometimes they are, but sometimes they shit places. They bark. They freak out.
Oh, yeah.
But if you just love them, you love them unconditionally. So it's the same thing. These parts of yourself, man, they're rescue animals. Mm-hmm. Nobody,
you know, that it's an amazing thing. I don't know if you've been aware, but like a lot of guys who come back from war with PTSD, the post-traumatic stuff, there's been this big stuff where dogs heal them, rescue dogs heal them, and, you know, the dogs in general, you know, because of that unconditional love.
Unconditional love, man. It is the ultimate. It's like a lot. It is the ultimate power. It's a kind of sunlight that when it shines on things, it doesn't just, it brings, what does the sun do? It brings things that are dormant back to life. That's what love does. It brings all these dormant things in it.
But it's not, you know what, love is like a word like God. It has, people just hear it and they turn off, man.
Yeah.
Oh, love, right. You know what I mean? But it's deep.
It's a deep, deep word. Yeah, it is. Yeah, you're fucking right, though, man. That word is just like chewed gum. It's like peeling a chewed gum off.
Chewed gum is a good way to put it. It's
Six
like
Flags pole, eating it. Like, nuts. But you know, it's a fun thing to experiment with, even in a little, in small ways throughout the day, which is this when you, that's like this mantra Ram Dass teaches is, I am loving awareness. That's something he recommends chanting when you're in line at the grocery store, when you're waiting.
Yeah.
Instead of going for your phone, start thinking in your head, I am loving awareness, I am loving awareness, I am loving awareness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The concept.
Sir, I'm asking for your Ralph's card.
I'm loving, can you hurry up?
You're like so into it, like. You're just beaming at everybody, and they're like, come on, buddy. And you're like, oh, God, do I love you guys.
Oh, boy, here comes another love person. They're so slow.
They're so slow.
Eddie, you got a tell me about your new comedy album.
My new – and this is all leading to this, what we just talked about. My new album is called In Ruins. That's true. And it's available on iTunes, and people should get it. And that's it. In Ruins, it was a Netflix special. It's now gone to iTunes. So if you search iTunes for In Ruins, Eddie Pepitone, In Ruins.
Guys, you've got to get it. Please download this on iTunes, because Eddie is one of my favorite comics, and I still remember that bit. I'm not going to give the bit away. I don't know. Do you still do the bit about the – I won't give away the punchline, but about the Make-A-Wish kid who does
– I haven't done that in a long time.
I'll never – that's one of comedy bit that I – you know like how some comics have bits that you just bring
– Is that the mean kid who's like
– Okay, that's the punchline. Yeah. The punchline is this kid. Eddie does this great Make-A-Wish kid. He's getting to do stand-up comedy, but he's actually an insult comic.
His final wish is to do stand-up, and he just is like, hi, folks. Everything hurts, especially your face, sir.
Yeah.
You know, like he's a Don Rickles.
He's a Don Rickles Make-A-Wish kid. But Eddie, I hope people, you guys have got to get his album. And then what's your website?
EddiePepitone.com is my website.
Twitter.
And my Twitter is at Eddie Pepitone.
And there's a great documentary about Eddie called The Bitter Buddha, which is amazing.
You can get that by bitterbuddha.com.
I will have all these links at duncantrussell.com. If you like this podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Go to our shop, buy some of our shirts, go through our Amazon portal, subscribe to lynda.com, hug yourself, forgive yourself, and you'll forgive the entire planet. Don't forget to wash your dogs. I'm going to go wash mine right now. See you next week. Hare Krishna.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.